Hi, this session won't be too long, but I would like to introduce Matthias, who will talk a little bit about his service StartTLS. Then I will present the HealthCheck platform that we used to do the HealthCheck report that Anne-Marie talked about this morning. So,
thank you. It's a bit improvised. I got the opportunity to talk 10 minutes ago. But StartTLS.se is a service aimed at consumers so that they can see whether their mail provider provides support for the StartTLS encryption when sending and receiving emails. Because I personally think that we need to move more towards a more end-to-end secure network and use more safer encrypted services. And one imperfect but existing such standards is StartTLS for for mails, where you, which provides an opportunistic encryption of mails. It's not secure against the man-in-the-middle attacks, etc. But if during normal operation, it will be impossible to listen in to the mails being sent. And the standard is implemented in all major mail server softwares. The only thing that's really missing is that for ISPs, companies, organizations to turn it on. And I thought that it would be good to make a tool so that normal users can check whether their ISP, their company, has turned it on, and then tell their customer service or the sysadmin that, oh, maybe we should turn this on. So it's just, you just enter the email address to search. Check. You can either check your own address, then you have to send a mail to test@startls.se, and you will get a mail back with a report whether it you can send encrypted mails and whether you can receive. And then you can with the other one, you can check any email address whether they can receive. Send it, test it, and you get a nice report, and hopefully you get the congratulations. This person can receive mails with StartTLS, and then of course you test whether you can send it through the sending a mail message to test@startls.se, and if you both can send and your friend can receive, you can be reasonably sure that the communications between the mail service will be encrypted. I should show you some domain where it's not working, but I'm not sure who. I don't want to be mean to anyone. This, as I said, a simple service aimed at that anyone should be able to use, I think it provides a. That's its job.
What are the most common errors that they've seen when people start trying to use StartTLS?
I must unfortunately admit that the most common error has been in the actual implementation of the service, that it has been had some downtimes and hasn't stopped receiving mails and so forth. So right now it has been programmer and system administrator errors, not user errors.
So this means they are not only capable of receiving or sending, they're actually using it to turn off this.
Yeah. The way it works is that the receiving mail server says that it has the capability, and then it's up to the sending mail server to decide to use it. So if you if you test your address and you get an okay that you're using it for sending, then you can be sure that it's going to be used with any mail server that has it on for receiving. I decided that because of the MX post in DNS, it's kind of impossible to get a good certificate chain. So I decided that for now, it's only going to be possible to do the opportunistic, not the truly safe sending of emails.
If there is a difference, if I'm testing,
yeah. Are
you looking if there is a difference next time I'm
testing? I have log files of the lookups, and I'm in the next software revisions. I will store the initial result and any changed results, so that we can see if more people turn it on.
I have experience in this. Perhaps you said that, how do you find the main server?
I do a DNS lookup of the mail server. Okay. You mean that it.
I did give the mail server, but it's not working. Maybe it's irregular.
Okay.
I got the DPR record.
Maybe I should go debug the service. No, it looks up the IP number of the mail server, and then it does a reverse lookup and shows a reverse lookup if possible.
And then I will show a little bit of the tool that we used to do the health check report, and this is what you see when you open the tool. You can see all the data sets that we have. We have the European TLDs, including .eu. You can look at what's in there, and you can add or remove domains. You can do this for basically all data sets, so there's a lot of domains in the very large data sets. And then you can also compare two sets of data. For example, we can look at the municipalities and compare those to the big stock companies, OMX 30. And you can compare those data sets with each other. You can easily compare old and new runs of the same set of data as well. So this usually takes a little bit of time. Hopefully this works today. If it doesn't, I don't have anything to show. It should work. It uses, there's been some.
No, it's not.
Yes. But it's the back end of the service that is slow. Maybe I should just use one small data set and show it. And that, what? One more time. Here we can now see one set of data, not compared with each other. So here you see that all the .eu domains are using IPv6, and there's also an explanation for each test that is done. None of them are using DNSSEC, which seems a little bit odd, but I think that's because the root is not signed, there's no DS records published in the root, so that will change as soon as root is signed and we have published all the TLD records in there. For DKIM, we only look up the ADSP record because all the other methods of finding DKIM keys is very hard. It's not very accurate, SPF. For some reason, there's one TLD that has an MX record. And it's also published in an SPF record, which is a little bit odd, but it's in there. And StarTLS is pretty much useless because you shouldn't use a TLD for email. No. So you can also see the common errors of the TLDs. No EDNS 0 support. And one domain also publishes a reserved IPv4 address as an NS pointer, which is a little bit odd also. Oh yeah, critical means that you have such severe DNS errors that you cannot reach that domain at all. Yeah. So error is the most high level in this set of data. And you also have a set of common warnings. Reverse lookup does not work, it's very common. I think it's the most common DNS error people have, a warning. So you see a summary of the errors you see. No critical errors among the TLDs, which is good. This is not the case if you look at the whole SSO. You only have a small set of domains that have errors, and there are some more warnings in there. So here you see that you have 0 critical domains, 3 error, and 24 warning. That's 24 out of 28. So lots of domains with warnings. We also have, I think it's .se, we have www.se published in some. So that's probably our domain that uses the Apache web server. we have some web server response codes because we are beginning to look at the web stuff as well. We want to do more things with looking in at websites, but we only look at, we do one get and see what we get back. Also, we can see the character encoding and stuff that's returned in the HTTP header. This is a little bit more interesting. If you look at all the EU TLDs, we see that as many as 6 of them are hosted on a French name server. I think the IPv6 address is the same name server, but it's the IPv6 address without reverse lookup. If you look at the whole SSO, you will find that the top 1,000 name servers will host up to 90% of all the Swedish domains, which is a lot. So that means if the, you know, one of the top 5 name servers crashes, it will lose a very big part of the Swedish internet. So that's why we sort it in this way. This is a little bit odd for this set of data, but we look at the web things here. Oh, this is what DK Hostmaster that has MX records. it's not true that it's DK. It only says that that is the mail server that is used. It doesn't mean that it's DK that has published it. And we also have the most common ASS that publishes the, I think it's the DNS servers.
Yes, it is.
Yes, okay. So we have NetNode as the top one vendor in Europe for running DNS. I don't remember who is AS1208. Probably community DNS or somebody like that.
The reason why one of the reasons we're looking into this is there is a tendency that different categories shows the same name service providers. So if the one governmental agencies get problems with, or if one name service provider, I should say, get a problem, probably the whole and the entire government and agency category will have the same problem, which means that you will be able to disturb an entire group of users, which might be a bad idea. So
yeah. For example, we can see that Landsting is almost all using the same ISP. So if they have problems, all the Landsting will have problems as well.
And that is probably explainable with the public procurement process that is common in Europe. You have these agreements that some is putting up for the public domain, and they have to agree on using the services that the public procurement have, bought from the vendors or the service providers, which means they will end up in the same ISP or name service provider or mail provider or whatever. And I think that is something that I didn't really consider.
Yeah. And we have a lot of old players such as Sunet, which is running a lot of domains. RIPE, NCC still runs a lot of TLDs. I think they are moving away from that. It's very hard to find cheap and good name server vendors if you're a TLD because you want to have a good agreements with them. And it's the French that runs IPv6 the most. And then we have community DNS, of course, and Sunet. And NetNode has dropped down in the IPv6 list. Yeah, that's basically it. There are some more data in here that we don't currently have in the web interface. So we try to expand this platform to include the mail check that you saw earlier today, and also doing more with the web and looking at the content of the web and see how much dependencies that are on different technologies such as JavaScript or Flash or. And also to look at if they follow the W3C standards and stuff like that. I don't know if measuring of IP connectivity will fit within this platform, but we'll definitely look into how we can do measurements that fit into how we work with measuring the internet. We also have data from our name servers that we can fit into this. We can also see all the resolvers out there querying our name servers. We can see all the domains that are queried, so we can match the, for example, web content with the number of queries and see where the traffic comes from. Since we're the registry, we can see all that. And I don't think we should match all those things together, but we can. So we see what the most popular website is and see that they have the quality that is needed to actually fulfill the, quality that they deserve. So I think we should finish with some sort of roundtable discussion. I'm not sure who are willing to participate in that, but I am very interested in knowing more about how to measure the web, because I don't know if I can do that in the right way without actually consulting a lot of people. We have been talking a lot with Load Impact, and we have also been talking and hearing here about Pingdom and how they measure the web. So I'm not sure what you feel comfortable about discussion. Any questions in general about our tools?
If you know of any tool that you feel like was started as, and you have any idea that it existed, which is really nice, and if you have any ideas of any other tool that is available, I would like to know, because it's always interesting to see how this kind of test or formed. So send us a
that will cause us to generate a lot of traffic.
Yeah, but considering, you know, what our regular user generates,
yeah,
not that much.
We probably won't do such measurements regarding the whole SE zone, because that would be awful. No. So if you would monitor uptime on websites, you would probably do that about, I don't know, every 5 minutes or so?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. But still, every minute is not.
Yeah. And you do measurements with a lot of probes and not from one single point in the net, yeah. So if I need to do that, I would build a probe network and do all kinds of measurements from all around the network. So maybe we can do that in together with the IP measurements between the networks as well, see if the downtime is because of the networks doesn't peer. And we already do these kinds of measurements because we're monitoring our own name servers. So we have a small probe network to see if any of them is down. So we can't do that from one single node in the network, because that downtime could be because of anything then. So I'm not sure that we should monitor uptime of websites or services, because I think that should be the concern of the party that is running the web service, because they lose the customers. And, you know. We would more like to be sure that they have a service that is available even though another point in the network is down, such as their DNS service and things like that. It's not much. It's where in the network they are. I think we should look at another set of data. Then we can take. Hope this works. Because the TLDs doesn't have web servers in that way. So. at what software is used and oh. And here the comparison view between the TLDs and the media companies. So there's 40% Apache.
Do you keep track on when the domains change, web servers? Or,
you can do the historical comparisons. You can compare, for example, last year's run with this year's run and see that the number of websites that depends on the patch changes. So yeah, we have historic data, but we don't track even individual changes like that. We just keep the data and then we don't look at the individual websites. So you have the response codes again. We want to look more at the, as I said, the content on the web pages as well and see if they use, I don't know what version of HTML are they using and do they follow that standard that they say that they are following. So that we know what to improve in Swedish web services like that.
That's just from one request to homepage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you have load balancing and things like that, you can get all kinds of different results when looking at different types of content. What we also have in the report is the analysis of certificates that are used. That is not present in this user interface. Yeah. So we want to look more at the certificates that are used as well. You are looking into the security of websites. Please do. Yes. Har du presentert kommet til din dator?
Nei.
Ja.
Bare
lov å slå den
der. Ja. Jeg behøver lese for meg.
Du løser.
Tre stater.
Den her er ikke løst.
Aha. So I guess your idea is something like we have DNS check and we have mail check and they're both excellent and very useful, and it would be good to have web check as well, and it would be even better if it took some tests to test security. But for obvious reasons, as Håkan said earlier, if you can measure, you know things. And that led me to think about a man called Dan Gere, who's a computer security researcher who's into risk management and risk analysis a lot. And he's determined to come up with a good way to measure security. And he said once he met a computer chief of information security officer, or something like that, and this person worked at a major Wall Street bank, and he asked him, are you security people so stupid that you cannot tell me how secure I am? Am I better off this time than last year? How do I compare to my peers? And what risk transfer options do I have? And he goes on to say, this officer, he says that he came from management audit, of course, and if he were in any other part of the bank, like about bond portfolios, derivative pricing, equity trading, strategies, etc., he would be able to answer such questions to a five-digit accuracy. But us security people, we have no idea. We could give you like a green light or a red light, perhaps a yellow light, most often a yellow light. So it's really difficult. And the difference, the prime things about DNS check especially is that DNS is a very well-defined protocol. So is mail. So, and we know what best practice is. Einar said earlier that DNS check tests for best common practices. And fortunately, there are some for DNS, and that's what they check. So we essentially have a checklist, and if some of the checks don't go well, we decide that, okay, it's a red light, so it's not good. We don't have that for security. If we were to create a checklist for security, it would be amazingly complex. If we were going to check web, if we were to create a web check, we do have a well-defined protocol in there, and it's called HTTP. And that's well-defined. So we could make a checklist to see how, which version of HTTP is supported, which kind of version of HTML, do they handle all the headers properly, how could they, you could even try to how long strings of URLs do they accept, how many headers, how long headers, and you can do a lot of checks to see if it's done properly. And you can even go into TLS and check if they support it, if they support it in a good way, if their certificates are good, and so on. But we don't have a problem with HTTP, because what you're testing then is the web server. And we don't have security problems with web servers anymore. IIS 6 hasn't had a security hole, in a serious security hole, in like forever. IIS 5, on the other hand, had hundreds. Real security problem. But the new version and the new versions of Apache, they seem to be solid. So vulnerabilities in web servers is not a problem. Vulnerabilities in web applications, however, they are a problem. And we don't have, the web applications don't follow a protocol at all. There are as many versions of, as many implementations of user registration as there are user registration applications. So we can't test that. And I guess what I'm heading for is that this is majorly difficult and will probably take many, many years before we can reach anything like this. And I'm not the person to do this. It's probably the ones at MIT and Stanford and those guys who have a bit more well-developed imagination. Put down a few points what the WebSec check could incorporate, and they have a few problems. For example, if we were to check what HTTP methods were supported, like most often you use GET and POST, but there are also TRACE and HEAD and sometimes PUT and DELETE and MAKE COLLECTION and so on. We could check those, because if PUT works, that's a security vulnerability, because we can put stuff on the web server. Problem, we can only check the first page, because which HTTP methods are supported depends on in what directory you're trying to put it, for two reasons. Partly, the method could be, the PUT method could be activated for some of the, any amount of directories that are available, and the directory has to be, I always do this, I should always do this. And the directories should be writable by the web service user. So it's very difficult to decide, and we can't spider the entire web page and try every directory, because that would be way too intrusive. And speaking of intrusive, DNS check is obviously not intrusive at all. You could argue that the version bind tests and the zone transfers were, but they really shouldn't be considered intrusive. Mail check, however, the relay tests that are done are no different than, because what the relay tests are trying to do is trying to fool the mail server to accept the mail. that it's not supposed to accept. That's why it's our 20 different tests. So that's no different from trying to avoid a filter who's trying to stop you from attacking a database through SQL injection on a web server. So the mail check should be considered to be quite intrusive. Going along for the other, cookies. You could check for cookies, but cookies have the same problem as HTTP methods, because cookies have several attributes. I'll use these two fingers. That are important for security. First, it's the secure attribute, which decides that, which tells the browser that this cookie should only be sent if it's sent in a protected communication using TLS. So we're interested in this attribute. There's also another attribute called HTTP only, which tells the browser that this cookie is only reachable by the browser. It should only be sent by the browser and cannot be reached by JavaScript, for example. And that's a security feature as well. So we could visit the site, receive a cookie, and check these attributes, but we don't know anything about this cookie. It might be a completely irrelevant cookie that has nothing to do with security or a login. The security cookie could be sent by the web server at a later stage. And this is the fundamental problem. Both of these, both the methods and the cookies have the fundamental problem. They show the fundamental problem with checking web servers, because websites are like trees. They have multiple interfaces, and you can reach anyone you want. You don't have to go through a specific path. You can go to the last page at will. Mail and DNS have one interface, and that's the interface we're going to use. But a website could be considered to have how many, an infinite amount of interfaces. So when you start thinking about this, it gets really complex. But still, security in websites are the most important security problem we have. So we've got to think about these things, and I don't have any answers, unfortunately. Forgive me. But I'd really like to hear about your ideas. If you have any, we would be much appreciated. But you suggest like anomaly detection that you trigger on differences. If we compare this, and that's you could have some client-side logic mixed into this, and say you take this program and surf your web page with it for 15 minutes and we'll give you a small report. But if we compare this to the already existing web security scanners, that's, they have the same problem. We'll get to the same problem, because automated scans in web applications are difficult for the same reasons that web check is difficult. A DNS security scanner would be easy because we know what to look for comparatively, and a web application scanner would be amazingly difficult because they're so different. There's no protocol. So it will still be different, but if you can get the interaction on both ends, you had a much larger, say, decision, larger amount of information to base your decisions on.
I would like to make a comment or suggest maybe there is a big difference between offering a tool where people deliberately can test their own DNS, web, email, whatever, because they know that they are doing something on their own system, compared to where we automatically run checks on large number of domains that people aren't aware of. And the last version of the last variant is the only way to get the metrics or the long-term results from how bad is it when the first, in the first case, it's only the user that will get the information needed. And the thing is, why are we measuring in the first place? We were talking about that earlier. And in the end, it's like we want to help the end users to improve web services, DNS, email, and one thing to do that is to offer the tools. Okay? But in the other hand, we want to know, is there any improvement? And then we have to measure a large number of domains at the same time. And we, I don't know where I'm going now. I was just thinking, should we, should we just stop by trying to provide tools and not bother if there is an improvement goal? Is it that we just like to know because it's fun to know? Or is it really needed to measure? I know that Dan would probably kick me in the butt saying like that, because he's our CEO, he has this Metenitzletter in Flemish, I think, in Dutch, which is like measuring is knowing, and he's very much about facts. But I'm not sure, because I think that people will react. They will, for instance, if we start sending out emails now to all the service providers and the main holders, telling them that you are not doing good enough, they will call us and say, who are you to tell? I am their lawyer, could you please stop? Or something like that. Most different reactions from the end user's point of view, because they really don't know what to know. And they certainly don't want us to write on their nose that you're doing that.
I know exactly what you mean.
But about website security, you have this OWASP top 10 vulnerabilities. Are the tools available to check
Yeah, there are tools, but the tools are not good.
Okay.
Well, at least the automated tools. It's all the top 10 vulnerabilities. Don't everyone know what we're talking about?
The Open Web Application Security Project, they are gathering the top 10 web vulnerabilities and put them together. Yeah. And it's a very good tool for developers.
Yeah, very informational, because you can package it very well. And these are the worst ones.
Don't go there.
Stop going there. As I said, the automated tools are not perfect. And that has been the problem with security for ages, of course. And all of these vulnerabilities are easy to check if there's a human there who can make own decisions and such. But we have yet to have a tool that you can launch and get the facts. Because we can't emulate attackers very well. But if we could, those were to be the vulnerabilities to test, doubtlessly.
Do you think we should ask for people's improvement to do this kind of more intrusive? Because as you say, DNS is public information. We don't do any intrusion to anyone. That is information that is publicly available in the mainnet system. But as you say, the main share and the web share could be a bit worse.
Almost like the robots text file where you can publish, yes, to be intrusive, that's something.
Yeah, why not? You have to probably express it differently.
Because when I do penetration tests and have to test a mail server, you probably use MailChimp from now on, but I used to use a different service who did exactly the same relay tests. And it's a very good tool to check if their mail server is vulnerable to as an open relay. So it can be used as an attack tool. And it's very convenient, because you can just launch it and do something else for 10 minutes and have it ready. So I would personally want to, it would be good if you could limit it. Say if you, before the mail, we spoke about this at lunch, and if you could like receive a password or some random string of some sort to your mail, so you have to prove that you are the owner of this mail server. And receiving it via mail is probably a bad thing, but you have to prove that you own this server before you run the test. Yeah, and that's difficult, just testing mail and using the possibly faulty mail to deliver this token. So that's flawed. And for a web server, I guess you could use prove that you can read the logs by sending me the user agent I just used to visit your web server. But still, there are other problems. And I think if we could back off a bit and simplify things, you could start designing a web check from the ground up and doing tests like checking the content type and if HTTP 1.0 is still supported and how it handles weird content types and how it handles bad methods and so on, and gradually build it. But I think it will be very hard to reach some security check that is actually valuable. Aim high though, so. Anything else? One thing, the measurements are really about having some kind of unit to a unit and a quantity. And people trying to measure security often fall back on the number of vulnerabilities measure. And 2 years ago, more or less, Microsoft came out with a report trying to prove that Firefox was less secure than Internet Explorer using this exact metric. And they, the end result was that Internet Explorer had fewer vulnerabilities than Firefox.
In numbers, yeah.
Because it's a really bad metric, and it's very embarrassingly incomplete, because how many were looking for vulnerabilities, for how long, were they any good, the vulnerabilities found, were they serious, was it easy to exploit the vulnerabilities, was it possible to exploit the vulnerabilities, for how long was it possible, will there be new vulnerabilities introduced, and the questions just go on. So if you were to take hänsyn, if you were to take these questions into consideration, you would get a quite complex unit. And we feel like there are a lot of complex units in physics, like Newton, ampmeters per square inch, kilogram. But those units, which we find very complex, would probably be considered quite simple compared to this security unit, where you have a 1 to 10 scale, or maybe not a scale, but on security. So however you try to, there are too many factors, and it's even more difficult to find the relation between the factors than to find the actual factors. So wherever you go, it tends to be quite difficult. And this guy, Dan Geer, it's spelled G-E-I-E-R, G-E-E-R. He's done by far the most work in this area, and his reports are the ones you should look at. I'm out of thoughts now.
There would be no easy, from 1 to 10, how much pain are you in, according to website?
Well, actually, you could, depends on what you're measuring, actually, because the CISO I spoke about in the beginning, he was interested in the security of the bank, which is an amazingly large and complex system. But if he was interested in the severity of a specific vulnerability, the job would be much easier, of course, because the much smaller target. And we have methods to value vulnerabilities. There's a method called the common vulnerabilities scoring system, CVSS, which you use a bunch of, I think, 14 different values that you make an assumption and you get a value between 0 and 10. And 9 is bad and 1 is quite good. So it depends on your own, what you're trying to measure. And measuring the security of the bank will probably be hard for a long, long time. To measure the strength of a password.
Yes. 15 minutes for a computer for $1,000.
Yeah, measuring the strength of a password is more or less mathematical, so it's easy to measure.
Yes, it's simple.
It's like measuring time or a distance or an amount. But so that's one step, but we have several steps left, unfortunately. Any other thoughts?
Since it is quite complex, what about if you start with a subset instead? You say, I would be quite happy to use it, for example, on login functions and logs, how good, bad they are. Because it seems to be
If we could make a list describing how a login function should be designed to be secure, we could have the same methodology as for DNS check to check this. Is it that way? Is it that way? And that list would be something like passwords, and I'm talking about user management in general now, not just login functions. Generated passwords has to have high enough entropy. And you have to be logged out automatically in so many minutes. And you have to have the option to log out. And when you log out, the credentials has to be cleaned properly. Sessions that are authenticated should not be cached. Sessions that are authenticated should always go over TLS, and so on and so on and so on. But this list gets really large, and if we could, like you say, make it very, very specific, not even user management in general, but a login function, it would be possible, I guess, to have a checklist of this. But the second problem is to force all the free-thinking web developers who like new technologies and bells and whistles a lot to use this. And that's probably difficult. We do have the option of using the frameworks, because they all like using frameworks, like Java Server Pages and .NET and so on, and have .NET enforce these rules. So, okay, you can have a blue button, but you have to send the things sent via this blue button has to be done over a TLS, or so you force the security features.
Yeah. No, I just connect to the what should be cached if it's secure. I mean, your secure checker isn't going to have a problem knowing what part of the content of the site is used to visit and should not be cached, and which parts are just the layouts, etc., that should be cached, even if you're running TLS to get better performance.
Yeah, sure, but well, that's specifics. That's only details. It was just an example, but sure, that's difficult for automated tools. But the point is that there are a lot of this checklist would become pretty large, I suppose.
I would rather suggest that you actually publish a way to do a secure login, rather than try to check if you use if any login written is secure. Since, I mean, your checker right now is going to, if the site uses either Ajax for the login, it's going to be a bit hard to do the checking. But then your web check program needs to have the whole JavaScript stack and do tests on, etc.
Yeah. But there are, you were asking for documents describing how to do it properly, and there are, OWASP that we spoke about earlier have loads of even APIs for using this, doing this. But still, you can't test it if they aren't using that specific API, and that implementation.
Maybe this subject is something to bring to the AppSec conference, which will be in the Stockholm next year in June. I suggest that you join.
Yeah. I'll try to root for this Dan Gear guy to go keynote there.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
Okay, should we start with?
Yeah.
It's not really easy to summarize, but there is a large interest in knowing things and measuring things, and I think that's good. Because in the end, if you don't have the facts, you don't know what you need to do. So I think we have got some very good input here.
ambitious dreams, Jane.
We should probably aim for 3 million.
And I have a question. The tribe sounds like there's not the left of it. Did you get the result?
Yes.
Yes. You did. So, okay, then the bug is my log file, not my.
Either send it to me or to you, and we will try to put something up. My email address is quite easy to remember. It's by initials, AMEL, at IIS.SC, or Armin. You can have a normal one if you have to. And I think I have a business card. I can put it in the over the desk here so you can have one. To be a part of this measuring project, you're welcome.